Welcome to the Texas Sports Hall of Fame podcast, presented by the Fairfield Inn & Suites, Waco North. This episode, In the Clubhouse with Charles Cootie. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Texas Sports Hall of Fame podcast, presented by the Fairfield Inn & Suites, Waco North. I'm author and oral historian Jackson Michael, and in this episode, we celebrate 1971 Masters champion Charles Cootie. Charles Cootie grew up in Stamford, Texas, and later attended TCU. In addition to winning the 1971 Masters, he won the Dallas Open Invitational in 1964, which is now known as the Byron Nelson. He was inducted into the Texas Sports Hall of Fame in the year 2000. You'll hear a lot of great Texas golf history from Charles Cootie in this episode. Cootie attended Stamford High School in Stamford, Texas. In addition to playing golf, he played on the football team. He spoke about his high school football career for the podcast.
I had the pleasure of playing for the legendary coach, Gordon Wood, who is in the Texas Sports Hall of Fame. Gordon came to Stamford my freshman year in high school, and we had no idea that the caliber of coach that he was coming to a little old Stamford. And in a period of 8 years that he was there, I think he won 80 games. When he left, he went to Victoria and stayed there 1 year, and then the Brownwood coaching job just south of Abilene here opened up. He wound up winning 7 state championships there. He won 2 in Stamford. They were after I was gone. My senior year, we should have won our district, and we didn't. We played a very poor game in the district game. We didn't get into the playoffs. Back then, you had to win your district to get in the playoffs. But then the year after I left, and a lot of my classmates that were seniors that year, Stamford won state 2 years in a row.
Charles Cootie also played basketball at Stamford High School.
The football teams always seemed to, except for my senior year, always went into the playoffs. 1 year they went to the semifinals, the next year they went to the regionals. So football kind of overlapped into basketball. So basketball was always a late start. And we had some good teams. We always had winning records. We won district 3 years in a row, my sophomore, junior, and senior year. But we never advanced past district.
Of course, Charles Cootie is best known for golf. He started playing around age 13, and there's quite a story as to how he got started.
Well, when I was a young boy, my dad came home from the war in 1945. He was in the Navy, and he had got in some fellows. When they were dry docked one time, wherever they were, some of the guys were going to go play golf, and they talked Dad into going with them. And my dad was a good athlete. Anyway, so he took a liking to the game pretty good. When he came home from the war, he started playing, and I don't know, you're probably too young to remember these type of things, but he put his bag on a bag boy as a pull cart. And a lot of times he would let me go, and I'd pull the card for him. And then one day he let me try to hit a ball and stuff, and it just went from there. And then the summer of my 12th year birthday, I started playing golf a little bit after my birthday. And then when I was 13, that summer I had what the strain was, but I had what they call a light case of polio. I had no affliction from it. I wasn't paralyzed. I didn't have any lung interaction with it. But they wouldn't let me play any contact sports for a year. And that was going into my 8th grade year. And the doctor said he needed a lot of exercise. And my father said, well, he started playing golf last summer. And the doctor, he was a golfer himself. He said, that would be fantastic. So Dad looked at me and said, if you'll play, I'll get you a set of clubs. I said, let's go. And so that's when I really started playing. It was after my 13th birthday and having had polio.
He believes that having an athletic father helped him get off to a good start in golf.
I picked it up pretty quick, Michael. Like I said, my father was a very good athlete, and I inherited some athletic ability from him. I caddied a lot for a player that lived in Stanford. I caddied for him on the weekends when he played. And actually, I learned a lot by watching. I never did have formal lessons until I was a freshman in college. I had a few lessons with a golf pro there in Fort Worth that had the reputation of having worked with Hogan when he was a young man.
When you research Charles Cootey's background, you'll often find material stating that he went to Abilene Christian University before attending Texas Christian University. Although Cootey has strong ties to Abilene, he isn't sure how ACU wound up on his resume. He said that if he would have attended college in Abilene, it likely would have been at Hardin-Simmons, where his mother and father went. He then told the story of his recruitment to TCU and why he chose Texas Christian over the University of Texas.
The night I graduated from high school, I hadn't signed a commitment, but I was about to sign a commitment with Texas University to play golf and to try to play basketball if I wanted to. And then that next week, the TCU basketball coach came to talk to me, and they were recruiting me to do the same thing, to play golf and to play basketball at TCU, with the agreement that if I decided not to play one sport, I could drop the other one and still keep a scholarship. And at that point, I decided to go to TCU because it was closer to home. Austin was 240 miles away, and Fort Worth was 150.
So Charles Cootey had the opportunity of playing both golf and basketball at TCU. He and I briefly discussed his early college experience as a Horned Frog.
The first three times I came home, I hitchhiked. And my parents didn't like that. They didn't like me hitchhiking. And it's not that they could afford it, but Dad worked out a deal with a local car dealer, got me a 53 Ford at a reasonable price. It was used, of course. And this is in 1955. And with the agreement that I would work for, Dad worked for Humble Oil at the time, and they would hire the kids of employees to work in the summertime, and that I would take a job with Humble and work in the oil field after my freshman year, and pay for almost half of the car, which I agreed to do.
So you worked in the oil fields in the summer?
Yeah, in the summer after my freshman year in college. That would be this, the summer of 1956. And I worked actually two summers, 56 and 57. So I really didn't play much golf in my first 2 years of school in the summertime.
Were you playing basketball for TCU?
I played 1 year, and I found out that I didn't jump quite high enough and I didn't run quite fast enough. And then also it was a tremendous overlap in the golf season. Back then, the competition in golf, the schools played matches. And I wasn't going to be ready at the time that I should be ready to try to play in matches. And so I dropped basketball after my freshman year.
You might remember that earlier Charles Cootey mentioned that he didn't have formal golf lessons until his freshman year in college, and that was with a man who had also worked with Ben Hogan when Hogan was a young man. Here's what Charles Cootey said he learned from that instructor.
The thing that I remember the most that he instilled into me is golf is a visual game. You imagine the shot that you're trying to hit, and then if you're well coordinated, your muscles react and create the shot that you're trying to play.
That golf instructor wasn't the only connection that Charles Cootey had with the great Ben Hogan. In fact, Cootey even got to know and play golf with Ben Hogan.
I knew Hogan. I played with him about three or four times. That is the most intimidating round of golf I ever played. you know, to this day, I still think he was the best striker of the ball that ever lived. I'm playing with him in a casual round at Colonial Country Club in Fort Worth. And naturally, I'm very intimidated. I wanted to ask questions, but I was too scared to ask questions. And I hit a drive off the 11th tee into the right rough and in some trees. He looked at me and said, "Do you mind if I tell you something?" And of course, I'd wanted him to tell me stuff all the way around in the first 10 holes. And he told me something about the movement of my legs. And anyway, so we got up on the 12th tee. Now, it's just Mr. Hogan, his caddy, and me and my caddy. We're just a twosome out there playing. And I probably hit as good a drive on that hole as I ever hit in the 25 years that I played the tournament there. And I turned and I looked at him, and I said, "Did I do what you were talking about on that swing?" And he looked at me after a little pause. He said, "I don't know. I wasn't watching." That was Hogan's way of telling you, on the 11th tee, I gave you a tip. Now I expect you to go out and practice and use that advice that I gave you in your practicing. It was his subtle way of getting my rear out on the practice tee and hit balls.
When we return, Masters champion Charles Cootey will chat about his Southwest Conference golf career at TCU and share stories about his Masters victory in 1971, including what that famous green jacket ceremony was like for him. On the Texas Sports Hall of Fame podcast, presented by the Fairfield Inn & Suites, Waco North.
Hi, guys. This is the Rocket, Roger Clemens, and you're listening to the Texas Sports Hall of Fame podcast.
When you come to Waco, be sure to stay at the Fairfield Inn & Suites Waco North, located just a short distance from the Texas Sports Hall of Fame. You'll start your day off with a delicious complimentary breakfast, and you'll also enjoy the Fairfield Inn & Suites free Wi-Fi, fitness center, and pool. Next time you bring your team to Waco, make the Fairfield Inn & Suites Waco North your home base on the road. Welcome back to the Texas Sports Hall of Fame podcast, presented by the Fairfield Inn & Suites Waco North. TCU was, of course, a member of the Southwest Conference in the 1950s. Charles Cootey remembered what the schedule was like and compared it with college golf today.
As I remember, I think there were seven, maybe eight, I'd have to go back and try to name them, seven or eight schools in the conference, and you'd play alternate years, you'd play each school at their home course. And the college golf wasn't then what it is now. It's almost a business now. When my two grandsons played at Texas, it was a year round. They played tournaments in the fall and tournaments in the spring. And all we played were matches. We only played about, each year we only played about two what you would call medal tournaments.
The schedule also included a national tournament called the Border Olympics.
That was the first collegiate tournament that I won. It was practically all the collegiate teams at that time. It was Houston, Oklahoma State, Louisiana State, Arizona State, all the schools that had golf programs played. It was played right next to the air base in Laredo. They had to play golf with airplanes flying all over.
Charles Cootey won the Border Olympics individual championship in 1959. He also won the Texas State Amateur Championship at Oak Hills Country Club in San Antonio. As with many men in the United States during that time, Cootey also had a military obligation after graduating from TCU.
I love to tell people that at TCU, I crammed a four-year course into 5 years. And then when I graduated in the end of May in 60, I went into the Air Force for 3 years, because back then you had a military obligation. You either were drafted or you joined some arm of the military. And I'd been in ROTC at TCU, and I knew that when you were enlisted and you didn't make much money, and I'd make a little more money as an officer. Even there, I didn't make a lot of money, but my wife and I survived. We got married just right after I went into the Air Force.
In 1964, Cootie won the Dallas Invitational, now known as the Byron Nelson. The win came at an extra special time in Cootie's life.
That was right at the end of my first year on the tour. And I'll be very honest, I had not played well. And I was very disappointed in how I had played. And my wife, Lynette, was pregnant with our son, Kyle. He was due about the second week in August. I forgot the exact timing, but I think it was somewhere around the second week of July. I just came home to be home for the birth of my son. But at that time, we were staying at her mother's, who lived here in Abilene at that time. And I got to playing golf with a couple of good friends every day. And the Abilene Country Club here is very, very short, not very challenging golf course, but I got to shooting really low scores, just going out and playing. And when I went down to Dallas, fortunately, I didn't have to qualify, because then they had qualifying on Monday, and they didn't have enough people in the qualifying to fill the field. And so I didn't have to qualify. I just kept playing good. I guess it was a carryover of when I was playing around here in Abilene at that particular time, waiting on my son to be born. And anyway, I played very consistently, won the tournament, played with Billy Casper the last round. I think going into the last round, I think he was two shots back, and he finished two shots back. So I won the tournament, which gave me an exemption for 1 year at that point. And so now I can map out a schedule. And so my wife and I, we struck out on the tour in January of 65. And we kept playing for 24 years on the regular tour.
Although that win at the Dallas Invitational was a big moment in Cootie's career, he's best known for the Masters. He won that tournament in 1971. He came very close to winning in 1969 as well. He had a late lead that just happened to slip away in 1969. He shares the story with us here.
I was playing well when I went into the tournament. And then I got, all of a sudden, I'm on the 16th tee with a one-shot lead. As it turned out, had I parred the last three holes, I would have won the tournament. But I did not, obviously, because I didn't win. And did not play well those last three holes. And naturally, it was very, very disappointing, especially when you're a young player on the tour. You get a chance to win a major, and you don't know if you're going to get another chance or not. And then fortunately I went back and actually I played well in 70. I was within a couple of shots of the lead, I think, going into the last round, and didn't play particularly well. And then, of course, I didn't win.
The 1971 Masters was a thrilling tournament and Charles Cootie's crowning achievement. On the final day, Cootie, Jack Nicklaus, and Johnny Miller were all within striking distance of each other, and all three had a very good chance to win. Charles Cootie, however, came out on top.
In 1971, I started out well the first day, shot 66, and played not great, but played very consistently the last 54 holes. And won the tournament by two shots. Nicklaus and Johnny Miller tied for second. I enjoy telling Jack that I kept him from getting his 19th major. He probably didn't think it's as funny as I do.
The last few holes were extremely close between Charles Cootey, Jack Nicklaus, and Johnny Miller. Cootey went into 18 with the lead and won the tournament by 2 strokes. Here, he shares his memories of that final stretch run to the Masters Championship and guides us through the 18th hole, shot by shot.
Well, Miller made the cut, obviously, and then he played a very nice third round. I think he shot 68. I'm not sure, but I think that's what he shot. And then the fourth round, he kept playing well. And actually, we got to the, I think I bogeyed 14, and Johnny, I think, birdied 15. He actually had a 2-shot lead at that point. And Nicklaus did not have a good day. At that particular time, with Jack's, with his length and his ability to putt and play the golf course, he was one of the best putters in the world. He didn't have a good day. At that particular time, actually, if you want to equate something to par, his par for Augusta National at that time was about 68 because he could hit the ball so far. But he didn't have a good day, and he shot 72. But anyway, Miller hit his tee shot on 16 in the right bunker, wound up making bogey. And I birdied 15 while he was doing that, so now we're basically tied. And then I birdied 16 and parred 17, and he bogeyed 18, which put him 2 back in a tie with Jack. Both of them were 2 shots back.
What do you remember about lining up for that 18th hole with a 2-shot lead?
Well, the worst place you can put it on 18, there's 2 places you don't want to put it, and the worst place is in the trees to the right. And I definitely wasn't going to hit it into the trees. I turned the ball right to left when I played. I hooked the ball. And I hit a 3-wood off the tee. I aimed at the bunkers that are up there on the left side of the fairway. And I thought, well, if I hit it in the bunker, unless I get it up against the lip, I can reach the green out of the bunker. I hit a very solid shot, and I hit it just left of the bunker. And hit a 6-iron on the green and 2 putters for par to win the tournament.
A signature event of the Masters is the tournament champion has a green jacket presented to him. What is that ceremony like for a champion? And how do they have a jacket ready in his size? Charles Cootey remembers his jacket ceremony in 1971 and tells a great story behind his experience.
One of the things that I really treasure in the fact that the ceremony, you know, they don't know what size you are and everything, so they pick a member that is about your size in appearance, and they use that jacket as the, unless you have won the tournament before, they borrow that jacket from the member. The member that they borrowed the jacket from for me at the presentation was a fellow by the name of Charles Yates. And Charles Yates was a boyhood friend of Bobby Jones. In fact, he was a fine golfer in his own right. He won the British Amateur. I'm not sure exactly what year. I think it was somewhere in the early 1930s. And anyway, every day, because I was right there at the lead every day of the tournament, he had driven me from the scorer's tent on 18 to the press room. And then after I had won the tournament, he drove my wife and I from the 18th green to Butler Cabin for the presentation. And then he drove me down to the press room to do the press obligation. And about, 3 or 4 years before Charlie passed away, he came up to me one time at the tournament there. He says, Charles, I don't know if you remember, but I'm the one that drove you from the 18th green to the press room every day and then to Butler Cabin after you won. And I said, Mr. Yates, how could I forget that? And he said, well, I'm thinking about getting a new jacket, and I'll give you that jacket that they put on you at the presentation if you'd like to have it.
As we concluded the interview, Charles Cootey spoke about what being a member of the Texas Sports Hall of Fame means to him.
I consider it a real honor and a privilege to have been selected to be a member of the Texas Sports Hall of Fame. And I wish it all the success and hope that everything goes well for it there in Waco, and that they start getting a lot of people to come through the museum and look at everything, because a lot of great athletes have grown up in Texas and are now enshrined in that Hall of Fame. It's something I'll always treasure.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Texas Sports Hall of Fame podcast. Remember that each summer, the Texas Sports Hall of Fame hosts the Bob Lilly Golf Classic, giving you an opportunity to play a round with a Texas sports legend. Visit the Texas Sports Hall of Fame's official website, tshof.org. That's tshof.org. And click on the events tab to learn more. When you come to Waco to visit the Texas Sports Hall of Fame and attend one of its great events, be sure to book your stay at the Fairfield Inn & Suites, Waco North.